Hey, everybody, this is Pierre Quinn, and you're listening to the Leading While Green podcast, where my mission is to help you live, learn, and lead with confidence. Here on episode number 11, we're talking about the fact that opportunity has a window. Of course, we're going to talk about the Revision Conference and why, as a speaker, you need to familiarize yourself with your space, why it's important to let people on your team do their job, and the real reason why dreams die. So, listen up. I was having a conversation with my wife this week about missed opportunities and opportunities that were missed because I missed them. They were there. They were there for the taking. But because I wouldn't move on them, the opportunity passed me by. I remember when we lived in Kentucky, I had a meeting with a leadership consulting company. And this company wanted me to come in as a contract consultant. They had heard about some of my work, some of my speaking. They had heard about my book, Leading While Green, and they thought that I would be a good asset on a contract basis, or flexible schedule. I could work with them when my schedule would allow it. And it would have been an incredible opportunity. And I remember going to the meeting and sitting down with some of the partners and the other consultants in the firm. And it was a really good meeting. We had a really good time together, just bouncing ideas off of each other. And when the offer came, the opportunity came to work with them on a contract basis, I said no. And the real reason why I said no was because I felt like in my head that I wasn't ready for it, that I needed a couple years before I jumped into this idea of leadership consulting, that, you know, I had all types of excuses as it related to my schedule. I was working with a handful of churches at the time, and they were saying, hey, we're willing to work with you as much as you can put in your schedule to work with us on a contract basis. And I look back on that experience several years ago, and I kick myself and I say, man, that's a missed opportunity. Now I'm coming back full circle and looking to do more of leadership consulting with organizations. And I think how much of an asset that experience as a leadership consultant would have been to me and what I'm looking to do today. And this is what I'm realizing about opportunities. I'm realizing that opportunities have a window. Now, the gifts that you are given, the calling that's on your life, and I believe that everybody has a God-given calling. I believe that everyone has a set of talents and abilities. Some of them are very latent because we haven't unearthed them or discovered them for ourselves, but they're there. And I also believe everyone's given a unique set of opportunities. Now, the thing about the opportunity is that opportunity usually comes in windows of time. Windows of time. When someone lays before you an idea or a chance to do something, the clock is running. The countdown is running. And when you don't move on that opportunity, it will pass you by. And the truth is, the opportunity sometimes passes you by and goes to individuals who may be less talented than you are, maybe less gifted than you are. Maybe they don't have your level of expertise, but they have a level of willingness, and they were ready to move on the opportunity when it was presented to them. And when we miss out, and then we finally get to the place where we feel like we're ready, like I'm ready now to do a lot more leadership consulting that I'm doing. I'm ready now. I'm ready. And I'm looking around for these opportunities, and the opportunities are not coming as fast as I want them to. And I have to patiently wait for that next window to open. And it's not always comfortable waiting, because you feel like you have the tools, you have the resources, you have the experience now, you're prepared, let's jump on this thing, and you're scouring and you're scratching and you're clawing and you're looking, but the opportunities are not coming fast enough. Sir Richard Branson, the brain behind the Virgin brand of everything, Virgin Mobile, Virgin Airlines. They have a whole consortium of companies. Richard Branson says something to the effect of, if someone offers you the incredible opportunity or the opportunity of a lifetime, say yes and then figure out how to do it later. Say yes and figure out how to do it later. And what I let escape me was the fact that this consulting firm that was looking to hire me on a contract basis, they knew the limitations of my experience. And what they were presenting before me was an opportunity to grow and to learn. They were not expecting me to be a top level or senior level consultant at my age, but they were giving me an opportunity to learn and grow. And I didn't take that opportunity. And I really kicked myself for it. And now eyes are open now when opportunities come. Eyes are wide open. And I'm much less apprehensive than I used to be. And that's one of the things that we're going to talk about at the Revision Conference on Sunday, October 29th, University of Maryland, Baltimore campus. We're going to talk about seizing opportunities and the importance of when things are laid before you, why you should move on them. Now, I visited the University of Maryland today. I visited the actual room where we're going to have the Revision Conference on October 29th. And this is really important. And I learned this. I can't remember who I learned it from, but it wasn't an original idea that came from me, but I learned the value of really just scoping out a room before the time comes for you to present. Now, this particular event, the Revision Conference, is an event that I'm hosting. The Cardell Group, my company, is sponsoring this, and we have a group of speakers who are coming. And it's going to be a fantastic experience. Six speakers, half day, impactful sessions, strategy, group coaching. I mean, you really want to be in Baltimore for the Revision Conference, and tickets are still available. Revision2017.eventbrite.com to register for that. I encourage you to sign up for the VIP session. That's going to be it's going to be crazy, bananas. It's going to be a great time. So you want to be there. But usually when I go to an event, I'm not the host. I'm just a presenter. I'm just a speaker. And what I've learned, and the advice that was given to me, I can't remember if it was on a webinar or not, but there's a value of being in the room, of taking in the room, of scoping out the room, of feeling out the room before you present, becoming familiar with knowing where you're going to stand, where people will sit. It actually reduces your anxiety if you're already familiar with the room. So I try as much as possible before I have to speak at an event. I try to get there early so that I could familiarize myself with the room and be comfortable with the room. I try to do that in the church space, in the ministry space. If I'm doing something at a church, I try to get there early enough so I can sit and take in the experience of sitting in the space, especially from the perspective of someone who'll be listening, and it does wonders for your presenting, because that's one less thing that you have to worry about. So if you're on this, if you're listening to this podcast today and you're a speaker, you're a presenter, or you work with events, or you're looking to put on events, or you participate in events of some kind, small or large, it could be book signings, it could be trainings, it could be an event that you're hosting. It's good to get in the space and familiarize yourself with the space and learn the nuances of the space and where you are supposed to stand. I was speaking at an event a few days ago, and the way that the room was constructed, there are these pillars in the room. And I was there early enough so that I could become comfortable with the room so that the pillars wouldn't affect if people were sitting on opposite sides. You know, that would have been weird, but I figured out a way in my head to manage it. Now, we all sat on one side, so it wasn't a problem, but I was there early enough because sometimes hiccups occur too. You want to check out your tech if you're using slides. You want to check microphones. You want to check placement if you're going to be behind a podium or in front of a podium, all of those things. And the more that you can familiarize yourself with the space, the better you are. when you get to a venue, that's really not a time to practice. It's really not a time to prep. It's really not a time to prepare. I remember being in seminary, and one of my preaching professors, she told me that when you pull up at a church and you get out of the car, you need to be ready to go. You need to be ready to deliver your message. It's not a time to sit back and to relax and do final preparations. Nope, final preparation is over. You need to be ready to go. You need to be shaking hands and talking to people and familiarizing yourself with the environment so that you can give the best presentation that you possibly can. So, yeah, we were there, University of Maryland in Baltimore, just getting a feel for the room, myself and the person who's running logistics for me. Shout out to my good friend Matthew Matovo, who's running logistics for me for the revision conference, and just familiarizing ourselves with the space. Now, when we left the campus and we headed back home, well, I was getting in the car and I started the car, and the car started, but I heard a clicking sound. Now, this clicking sound was familiar to me because the day before I had to jump start my car because I went to turn the key and it just clicks, like that click, 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 click sound of when your battery is dead. So I jumped the car and was driving the car, let it run for a while, and said, you know, I'm going to have to check this out. So we were leaving Baltimore and started the car, but it had that little clicking sound. And I said, okay, I can't play around with this thing. Now, we've had the car four or five years. We had the car closer to 4 years. And the car, you know, we've been blessed. We haven't had to do a lot of major things on the car besides some routine maintenance. And the car has the original battery in the car from when the car rolled off of the lot. So turn the key in Baltimore, click, click a little bit, but the car starts. We head back. We leave Baltimore. And I said, I'm going to get this checked out. So I go to an auto parts store. Now, I already know that I need to replace the battery. I already know, but I do. It's free to have your battery checked. So I walk inside the auto parts store and I ask the guy to check my battery. And he spends about 10 minutes checking the battery. And he says, yeah, bad cell. It's time for you to replace the battery. And I said, all right, well, I can handle this. Now, I was thinking I'm going to purchase the battery. I'm going to drive home. I'm going to put the battery in because I've replaced the battery on several vehicles. Not really a big deal. Something easy for me to do. But he said, no, I got it. It's free. And there's a sign when you pull up, free battery checks, free battery replacement. So I go in, I order the battery, and he comes out and he's got his gloves on and he's got his tools to take the old battery out and the new battery in. Now, this is his job. He gets paid to do this. This is his job. He said he's worked at this auto parts place for over 4 years. And this is what he does. And I'm watching him take the battery out. And I'm irritated because I don't really like the pace in which he's moving. Honestly, I wanted to do the job myself. Now, he's capable of doing the job. He's trained to do the job. He's probably done this hundreds of times. But because I wanted to do the job myself, I was finding myself becoming more and more irritated watching him. And he finally got the old battery out, the new battery in. It really took it took less than 5 minutes. But I was irritated. I was simply irritated because I wasn't doing the job myself. And the truth is that happens a lot in the leadership space. When someone else is doing what we have the ability to do, even though they're paid to do it, even though they're trained to do it, just the feeling of knowing that it's not us doing it, sometimes we become irritated. Sometimes we undermine their work. We don't mean to, but we undermine their work and we criticize. And what we're really criticizing is not what they're doing. Because they're doing it correctly. There was nothing incorrect about him taking out the battery and putting the battery in. I was more concerned with the how, with his particular methodology. The objective was the same. Get the old battery out, get the new battery in. And he reached that objective, but I just wanted to do it myself. And it was a leadership lesson that I learned in that moment, that you just got to let people do their jobs. especially if they come to the same outcome and there are no problems, there are no issues, there are no challenges. And in many of the teams that we work on and many of the projects that we work on, the hiccup is when we don't let people do their jobs. When we don't let them, and if people need help, we need to be able to help them and support them and coach them. But sometimes we can be just downright nasty to people because we want to do what they're doing. And we don't realize the impact that we have as leaders, as influencers, as teachers. We don't realize the impact that we have if we train and coach and support people while they're doing their job. Or sometimes we actually think that our importance with the organization or our only role is to be the person doing the entire thing. Now, the crazy thing is, for as many of us who are listening want to do the entire job, then conversely, we complain about how nobody else helps us. Well, sometimes people don't help us because they know if they try to help us, we're going to take back ownership of the project. We're going to harp on them. We're going to take stuff from them. We're going to take responsibility and authority from them. So they just say, hey, you just have it yourself. Just do it yourself. And if you find yourself in a place where you don't have the help that you need, ask yourself, now this is not always the case, but ask yourself, how much am I overstepping boundaries when I assign tasks or people agree to do things and I step in and try to take over simply because I don't like the way that they're doing it? I don't like the methods they're using. Now, there's nothing wrong with their methods. It's not bad. It's not evil. It's not malicious. It's just not the way that I would do it. And because it's not the way that I would do it, then we really categorize people as doing it wrong. So how can you, as a leader, let people do their job? It was the job of the guy to change the battery, and he changed the battery, and the car is fine. Then I had to be okay with letting a person do their job. Whew. Now that was a lot. Sorry, that was a bit of a rant there, because as much as, you know, I wrestled with it, with the guy changing the battery in the car, I see it from a leadership perspective with the leaders that I work with, and the challenge on their teams when people won't let them do their job. So be on the lookout for that and really talk that out and ask your team, ask them, be open. Like, am I overstepping my boundaries with projects and with tasks and with events, and how can I do a better job of letting you do what it is that you're supposed to be doing? Now, I'm not quite sure we'll talk about overstepping bounds at the leadership conference. It might come up maybe in a Q&A at the revision conference, but I can't make any guarantees. What I can guarantee is that with the second time, this is the second time we're holding this event, and you want to be there. It's an experience that you will never forget. Now, one of the things that I know we will talk about at the revision conference is why our dreams die. Why do some of our dreams die? And here is the truth. Now, if you find the author for this particular quote, or an author, this quote has been attributed to a lot of people, and I didn't pick one author because you look up those quote sites and it says sometimes five or six different people are attributed with the quote, but whatever. So the quote is, fear has killed more dreams than failure ever will. I'll say it one more time. The quote is, fear has killed more dreams than failure ever will. And I think in a way that goes back to the opportunity window. Sometimes we don't take advantage of the opportunity when the window is there, or in the lifetime of the opportunity, because of fear. Really, I didn't take the opportunity with the leadership consulting company when I lived in Kentucky. I didn't take that chance because of fear. That was it. It was fear, and fear is the greatest dream killer out there. Fear is the biggest dream killer out there. And people ask me sometimes, you know, or they say things, well, I'm not like you, and you're so confident, and you got everything together perceptibly. And no, that's just perception. I struggle just like everybody else. I have doubts like everybody else. I have hangups like everybody else. But what I'm learning as I'm getting older is the importance of leaning in when you're afraid. of doing it when you're afraid, of doing it scared, the importance of doing it scared. And for much of life, life is like that. You got to do it scared. I remember when I first started speaking, you know, years ago, you're nervous. You're a nervous wreck. Your hands are sweaty. Your palms are sweaty. Your knees are shaking. Your mouth gets dry. I remember my mouth used to get really dry. Doesn't get dry as much today, but it used to get really, really dry. And that's because I was scared. And sometimes I would say, I don't even want to speak because I'm doing it. I'm afraid, and the fear is going to take over me. But it got to a point where I said, well, the only way I'm going to be able to do this is if I do it afraid, is if I do it with that apprehension, with that anxiety. I gotta fight through that. Well, one of the best movies I've seen, and I know this is subjective because everybody has their favorites. I watched the movie We Bought a Zoo with Matt Damon. And I think I may have shared it on the podcast before. And in one of the pivotal scenes in the movie, Matt Damon says that really to accomplish the things that matter in life, all you need is about 6 seconds of courage. Because if you can get past that six seconds of fear, you can accomplish everything. I think it's Mel Robbins. Yeah, Mel Robbins, in her book and her TED Talk and her speaking talk, she talks about the 5 second rule. And really, if you can get that past that 5 seconds of fear, her idea is that when something is before you is big and is scary and oppressive, that you gotta act on it in the first 5 seconds. Because if you let time pass, your brain will really tell yourself, it'll go into flight mode and tell you don't need to do it. And some of us, that's where we are. We've had incredible ideas, but every time we sit down to think about it, we don't move on it in the first 5 seconds. We let that fear creep in. And then when the fear creeps in, it becomes harder and harder and more difficult to actually move on that idea. The same with just about everything that I've been a part of, with the conferences, with the speaking, with the church work. It happens all over, with difficult conversations, with strategic planning, with meeting with individuals. You let that fear creep in. You let that fear creep in, and it really paralyzes you. It takes away your ability to do what you've been called to do. So I'm talking to somebody today who is just wrestling with an idea, wrestling with a project. You already know you're supposed to write a book, right? You said that one of your New Year's resolutions was to get a draft of a book done, and the year is already over, almost over. We're in the fourth quarter, and you have not started. You said that you were going to upload your music to SoundCloud, or you were going to do a recording, a Facebook Live of your music, and put it out there for the world to see, and you just haven't. You're waiting for the perfect time. You're waiting for the perfect opportunity. And I was talking to my friend Matt, who's doing logistics for the Revision Conference. I was telling him that I was waiting on the perfect opportunity to do something. And he asked me the question, well, when is the perfect opportunity? And my response was, sometimes, you know, how you gotta taste your own medicine, right? I said, you know, sometimes the perfect opportunity is the one that you create. It's the one that you create. I'm telling you, life has changed. Life has shifted so much that you don't need permission of individuals the way that you needed before. You don't need the co-signing of individuals the way that you needed before. You don't need tons of expensive equipment to get ideas off the ground like you needed before. Now, the landscape is so level. I mean, the phone that you have in your pocket is chocked full of resources for you to take your message to the world, and you're doing it, and you're not pressing record, you're not sending the email, you're not having the conversation, you're not putting up the poster, you're not hanging out your flag, your banner that you're open for service, because you're afraid, and fear is going to kill your dreams for the rest of your life. And it's got to get to the point where, as John Acuff says, you got to punch fear in the face. You got to punch fear in the face, and you got to do it afraid. You got to do it scared, and you got to keep going. And there's a part of you that as you progress, because the challenges and mountains that you face will always get bigger, there's a part of you that will always retain a little bit of fear. And that's good, because you can challenge, you can channel that energy, you can channel that apprehension, you can channel that to do a good job. You can use that, that when you feel that little fear, truthfully, if you get to the place where you're not afraid at all anymore, it may be because you've lost your passion. And you've lost your desire to do what your heart was set on doing. And you probably need to shift. If there's not just a little butterfly in your stomach when you get up to speak, or you get on stage to perform, or you do a training, or you start to write a book, if there's not that little twinge of fear or apprehension, then you might need to move on. So here's what I want to challenge you over the next week or so, and especially at the revision conference, because I know you're going to be there in Baltimore. If you're in Baltimore, DC, Virginia area, if you're in Maryland, you need to get to this conference, revision2017.eventbrite.com. We're going to talk about all the speakers are going to talk about how they faced their fears and how they're facing their fears. Everybody's got a story of how they punched fear in the face and used that experience to overcome. And we'll talk about how we're currently doing it. What I love about this event is that sometimes you go to conferences and the people are 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ahead of you, and there's that huge gap. But not for this experience. Some of the speakers will just be slightly ahead of you. There might be even some who may be in some respects slightly behind you, and they're gaining on you because they're willing to wrestle with that fear. And they want you to wrestle with yours as well and push through. So I hope you're there. But here's what I wanted to challenge you to do over the next several days. Write down all the things that you really have in your heart that you feel that you're called to do, that you feel that's you're talented enough to do, that you're skilled enough to do. Write down all of those things. And then on the opposite side of the sheet of paper or on a different column, write down all the reasons why you're not doing it. Write down all of your fears, write down all of your apprehensions, all of your misgivings, your whys, and then ask yourself, what would it take for me to stand up to this fear? Because most of the time our fears are irrational. We're thinking about what people are saying about us. And I saw something on social media the other week that says that, you know, when we're 20, we really think about what other people think about us. At 40, we could really care less about what other people think. And then at 60, we realized nobody was really even thinking about us at all. I wonder what it would take for us to pick up on that idea much earlier in life and to face these irrational fears and do what we're called to do. Because understand this, as long as you don't do what you're called to do, as long as you don't face that fear, as long as you don't continue to walk in the direction of your calling, you will continue to live unfulfilled. You'll continue to dread waking up in the morning. You'll continue to anticipate the weekend, because that's the only time that you'll enjoy life. And then you'll hit the doldrums on Sunday night because you got to go back into work. But if you live according to your calling, you'll love to wake up every day and do what you're called to do. And my hope, my wish, and my prayer is that you live, that you learn, that you lead with confidence. That's all I got for this episode of the Leading While Green podcast. Hey, leave me a review on iTunes. That'll really help. And until next time, take care and God bless.